Dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashanthi Nilayam, the most happening place on the planet. Thank you, Prem, and thank you, Sai Prakash. And welcome, dear listeners, to this last leg of Thursday live broadcast from the studios of Radio Sai. Interestingly, 52 weeks have gone by since we started this Thursday live from the studios. It's 1 year of Thursday live programs, and thank you so much, dear listeners, for being with us and for sharing your feedback and encouraging us in many ways. And of course, we offer our indelible gratitude to Swami for making this happen, guiding us through His inevitable and invisible ways through so many people in so many ways. Dear listeners, the month of May is on. Yes, the mercury levels in Puttaparthi are high, but Puttaparthi continues to mesmerize. In fact, just this morning, as I was returning to my office after the morning bhajans, I met an Anglican priest from South Africa who was so taken over by the universality of Swami's teachings that he cannot help but marvel at the amazing commonality between the forms of Lord Jesus, Lord Shiva, Lord Murga, and Lord Satya Sai. The way he has delightfully discovered the tenets of Vedanta, which is the quintessence of all scriptural texts in India. The way he has discovered Vedanta in the lines and passages and parables of the Bible, and the way he has synthesized Lord Jesus into Nataraja and Lord Shiva into the Father of Christ. And everything based on deep study and research of this holy text, as well as, most important, long hours of inner contemplation and inner awakening. In fact, he is here in India just doing only this. He is spending most of his time in Arunachala, in the ashram of Ramana Maharshi, Bhagwan Ramana Maharshi, and all these insights that you are sharing with me was what he has received. And whenever he has time, he comes to Puttaparthi to bask in Bhagwan's divine presence. So speaking to him, it was a revelation talking to him. And dear listeners, very soon we are going to record a conversation with him so that all listeners, all of you, benefit from his experience and from his divine insights. So what happens in Puttaparthi every day is really beyond what anyone can imagine. The way the superlatively spiritually charged, most sacred space on earth, the most love charged place on this planet, the way it continuously touches, transforms and trains our minds and recharges our lives, this is something inexplicable. Even though the temperature is on the higher side, this temple town is vibrant, is vibrant, is vibrant as always. 10 days ago, we had the holy observance of Ishwaramade. And around this time, there was also another important conference marking the third anniversary of the Sri Satya Sai Vidya Vahini program. For those unaware, Sri Satya Sai Vidya Vahini project is a huge initiative of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust to harness the power of collaborative ideas, technology and people to take value-based quality education to every corner of this country. First to the semi-urban and rural areas and then to the elite schools. That of course is, in very brief, what this mammoth mission is all about. It's a massive project that actually seeks to revolutionize the way education is being currently imparted in this country. And a few bold steps have already been taken. And soon, we will be having a special program only on this unique project so that you are not only aware of what all this is about, but also have an opportunity to participate in this sacred task if you wish to. Even now, to know more about Vidya Vahini, you can visit shri-satya-sai-vidya-vahini.org. In fact, before this conference in Puttaparthi on May 5th and May 6th, 2013, the Vidya Vahini team had another very focused session of deliberation and discussion for 6 full days. Not in Puttaparthi, but in Sai Shruti, Bhagwan's abode in Kodaikanal. The place one ought to be, especially in the summer. And come to think of it, what an appropriate place Sai Shruti is to discuss about Vidya Vahini. Because it is here that Bhagwan conducted intense workshops for his students every summer, striving every second to instill into them the precious precepts of true Vidya. As Baba always says, what is true Vidya? Sa Vidya Ya Vimuktaye. That alone is knowledge that liberates. That liberates man. And Baba every year brought along with him scores of students with a few elders and guests to impart them this knowledge, not through discourses or lectures, but by only creating a beautiful ambience, a beautiful milieu, so that these precious real lessons of life are contemplated upon naturally and then assimilated seamlessly into their thinking, into the way of living, as they lived every moment in the immediate physical presence of the Sadguru. One observed the Lord and learnt. One observed the Lord and rectified. One observed the Lord and realized. One observed the Lord and strove higher and higher on the spiritual path. So yes, indeed, it was an intense workshop of a very unique nature, and we did dwell on a few aspects of this exceptional Kodai experience during this hour last week, but there is so much more to it, and that is what we will do today too in the next 60 minutes or so, and we will try to explore a few more hues of this beautiful multidimensional Kodai diamond. But before we begin, let us first offer our most prayerful and grateful salutations at the lotus feet of the one by whose grace we are able to walk and talk, think and articulate. Dear Lord, please bless us so that we are always conscious of your presence in every second and every facet of our lives. With this prayer, let's move on and welcome dear listeners to this yet another episode of Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. The time in the studios now is 8:47 and I am Team Radio Sai's Bishu, happily at your service. And today we discuss the Sylvan Spiritual Retreat with Sai in Kodai, the second episode of this discussion. In the first episode, we started our discussion with sharing how Bhagwan played the role of a host to perfection when he took the boys along with him to this hill station, right from preparing them for this trip mentally and physically in advance, to actually welcoming them when they reached Sai Shruti, to showering them with a bounty of gifts, thereby demonstrating the incomparable joy of giving, to looking after all their mundane needs like food, clothes, etc., even as profound spiritual lessons were being constantly conveyed through his life, through his gestures, through his every word, through his every act. And we ended the last session with a beautiful Telugu song, Madhura Mohana Ghanashyama.
Madhura Mohana Ghana Shama Sundara Sai Ananda Pradai Nai Dala Rasi Boi Madhura Mohana Ghana Shama Sundara Sai Ananda Pradai
A song that the boys sang to him on so many occasions to express what they feel for the Lord. And in the last session, we did discuss a little about the song, but there is so much more to it. And we will probably discuss about what really fascinated Swami about this song as we go along in this program. And if you remember, we not only discussed about this song, but we also dwelt on many other aspects, and we'll continue from where we stopped last time. And after the program last week, we did get a few feedback emails from listeners, which were very encouraging. And one of them, Miss Namita Sai Howard, had a question. Since in the discussion we had mentioned that Baba had made elaborate arrangements for feeding the boys sumptuously during every dining session, her question is this: what if some students could not take all that rich food? Did Swami insist them to eat even if they didn't like the food? And secondly, she asks, in one discourse Baba has said that if one eats only once, then he is a yogi, an ascetic, and if one eats twice, he is a bhogi, man given to pleasures for the world, and the one who eats thrice every day is a rogi, a diseased person. So given that Swami has said all this, why did Swami take pains to feed the boys so well? What are Swami's teachings on fasting? So these are her questions, and we wish to start our discussion today with these queries. Like last time, joining me in this discussion are two other former students of Bhagwan's University who are now serving in his institutions, Brother Neeraj Acharya, who after his MBA in Bhagwan's College now works in the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust, and Brother Sanjay Mahalingam, who too did his MBA here and works in the Department of Management Studies here in the Prashantinam campus. Welcome, brothers, to this program.
Sai Ram.
So, Brother Neeraj, can we start with you? You heard the question that Ms. Namita Sai has asked. Why was Bhagwan feeding the boys so well? Actually, it was only 4 sessions. It was not 8 sessions that probably she has mentioned that it is pre-breakfast, post-breakfast, and pre-lunch, post-lunch. Of course, it was not that much. It was just 4 sessions, but yeah. 4 sessions where
you're... 3 important sessions, and one was a mini-session. Mini-session. Snack session.
Okay, yes. Yeah, 3 important sessions.
3.5 sessions.
Yeah, 3.5 sessions. So, why this... What do you make out of Swami going to that extent to really cater to the palate of all the boys?
Okay, Sai Ram. And first thing, I would like to thank the listener, Sister Namita, for asking this question for various reasons. One is it made us also think on what Swami has said and what Swami does. And point number two, it is good for any sadhaka to have this inquisitiveness to understand Swami's message.
Yes.
And so that it can be put into action. Now, coming to her questions, my thoughts are like this. See, Kodai was a sort of a intense workshop, as we said. It was a summer camp. It was a summer retreat. Incidentally, in the month of summer, in summer, the 2 months that we get as vacation, boys go home generally. Whereas these special boys who were taken, or rather privileged boys who were taken to Kodaikanal with Swami, Swami takes personally, they have an opportunity to spend the time with their Divine Mother. So, first thing which comes to my mind is that as a Divine Mother, Swami wants to really express His love for His children who accompany. And the children doesn't meet only the students who accompany Him, but even the other senior staff and people who come. So that's why when He takes the group to Kodaikanal, He ensures that we are in a very homely atmosphere.
Yes.
And along with that also comes good food as an expression of His divine love. And as you mentioned that there were these food sessions, in fact the number of sessions which we get to listen to what Swami has to say and to imbibe the watching Him, they are much more valuable.
They are double the number.
More than that. The amount of time He spends with students and guests. For example, I was wondering when it comes to food session, suppose we go on vacation, we go back to our home, you know, mother will be waiting there to prepare some dishes.
I know.
It's true with everybody.
It's true with everybody. And Swami's love, as we all the time say, you know, it's the love of thousand
mothers. So it comes in that many thousand times.
Yes.
And when we go on vacation also, even though the mother makes the food, it is not the thing. That is one way in which she expresses her love.
Yeah.
Apart from, of course, you spending time with her, talking to her.
Yes.
So this is one aspect which I thought what Swami really showed through his expression of love. Second question which the listener has asked about whether overfeeding as compared to the spiritual thing in which we say that there should control on food.
Yes.
Yes, we had choice of whether we want to take few items or in fact we could even skip some of the sessions. In fact, I remember in some of, maybe in a little later part of the trip, I would in fact skip the sessions and I could go and join the serving team.
Mm-hmm.
So we had the choice. So Swami would show his love in terms of giving this exotic food.
Yes.
But we all definitely had a choice to say that we take what we want to take or we can skip something that we don't want to have. So definitely the choice was there. And third thing, which is a learning for me, and I'm sure for all those who accompanied Swami, was to begin with, for a few days, the food may really be exotic and may appear so enticing. But I'm telling you, in just a matter of 4 or 5 days, we will start getting fed up, getting almost nauseated. I remember, in fact, in 2003, when I went as a staff, I took a permission from my teachers to be part of the serving team for all the sessions.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. almost all the sessions I did. Because the reason was, one thing, I could give chance to the younger brothers who had come, so they can finish their food and go to the session to be with Swami. And second thing is, food was, by that time, definitely it was that realization had dawned that this is not something that...
The joy of serving was greater than the joy of eating.
Definitely. So, that's the way. In fact, you mentioned in the introduction, Vishu, that Swami was such a beautiful master. Not only that he gave message, but more importantly, he created circumstances in which we could learn the message and internalize it. You know, like Einstein says that, I don't teach my pupil, I create circumstances in which they learn.
He created that environment.
He created the environment. So, these are some insights which came from the question that Sister Namita asked. Sanjay, you want to add anything?
Yeah, thanks, Neeraj. As you said, Swami's entire life was an endless saga of expression of his divine love.
Yes.
Particularly the Kodai trip was a very concentrated, intense, close-up expression of that love. So whatever happened on the trip, whatever Swami did, whatever Swami offered with love was an expression of his unbounded love for his students, for everybody, but especially for those present there in his physical vicinity. So that is the spirit in which the whole thing has to be taken. That's the perspective which you have brought out beautifully. There was this question Sister Namita had asked about the contrast.
Yes.
And Swami says, one should control one's taste, the faculty of taste, one should control one's tongue, and how is Swami feeding his students all these delicacies?
Yogi and bhogi.
Yeah, yogi, bhogi, rogi, that thing. The way I look at it is this. The intellect always divides and questions. The heart always unifies and reconciles. So if we look at this whole thing in a mental way, we will always find conflicting things. Actually, if a pure intellectual were to read the Bhagavad Gita, in every shloka, he will find a contrast and a conflict.
Mm-hmm.
But if we actually approach it in a more reverential, prayerful and a heartful way, we will find the underlying unity of message. Let me drive the point more. For example, I have personally heard Swami tell a student that, you see, sugar is not good for you. Diabetes runs in your family. So do not have sugar at all for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
I heard this Swami tell a student, do not have, don't touch sugar for 1 year in any form. So you see, Swami, when necessary, did give the necessary input. Also, I have never heard Swami tell anybody, eat whatever you want, you know,
yes,
overindulge your tongue. You know,
never.
Swami never said that.
Never.
But when he was offering these delicacies to us, it had a deeper meaning of how Swami, how he was teaching us how to play a perfect host.
Yes.
How to be abundant in giving.
Yes.
That, how to share. And let us not forget how much we as students craved for that opportunity for dining with Swami.
Yes.
Let us not forget. And he was in that, through that, feeding us, he was giving us, how many people have experienced the beautiful joy of sitting in the same dining room with Swami and dining with him. It was one of the special features of the Kodai trip, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, you don't get it anywhere else.
We don't get it anywhere else, you know, not in Parthi, not in Vrindavan. It's a speciality of Kodai.
Yes.
So all these things put together, I feel there is really no contrast. And
it has to be taken in the right perspective.
And we always
and
have
Swami's
options.
Messages have to be seen in the right context.
And as Neeraj brother emphasized, we had options.
Yes.
We could always tell the serving boys calmly and politely, tactfully, that, you know, don't put this dish on my plate. More often than not, why the boys felt nauseated was because they didn't have enough control over their tongue. And they got so excited seeing the variety of the menu and the richness of the delicacies,
yes,
that they overconsumed. It was rarely, I have never heard anybody fall sick because Swami forced them to eat.
Actually, in fact, when they fall sick, Swami again cures them.
Yeah. In fact, that reminds me of two experiences, and they are really touching and at the same time very enriching, the message which comes through them. One of our brothers, this was an earlier trip, before 96, one of our brothers who was a little fatty boy, and when he was selected for Kodai, even before they went to Kodai, Swami had told him, see, just because good food, tasty food is available, don't hog,
don't overindulge.
Don't overindulge. I don't want you to put on any weight going to
any
Kodai.
Any more weight.
So this boy had mentally prepared himself. Yes, I have to keep up the word which Swami has, Swami has given to me. So he was attempting to control his, desire to eat. One of the sessions, there was some special laddu which was made, which was his favorite. And when the serving boys came, and when his brother saw this laddu, again, his mind started playing. He said, maybe I can have one of them.
It's okay if you have one.
Yeah, you know. And purposely he had selected a table which was a little away from Swami's table. No? Maybe Swami should not see what I'm doing.
Okay.
So he took the laddu in his plate. But definitely the Swami within was prodding him. And he felt during Brahmarpana he was praying to Swami within, Swami, please forgive me. But maybe I'm tempted to have this laddu. And he prayed fervently. And after the Brahmarpanam was over, when he opened his eyes, the laddu was missing from the plate.
Oh my God, laddu was missing.
And this boy thought, oh, what is this? I mean, is this the effect of Brahmarpanam? And he started looking around, and Swami was, this is typically what Swami does. Just by the time you finish your Brahmarpanam, he is a mitahari, you know.
Yes.
Just within those 1 minute prayer, he has finished his food and he will start going around in the dining hall observing what people, what boys are doing, how they are serving.
Yes.
Even the serving boys, how they are serving. Whether any plate and any item is over, then it should be,
yes,
somebody should go and ask whether the second serving is required. Everything he will observe. So when this boy opened his eyes and started looking around, Swami was moving, but Swami was not near him. So he was wondering, what has happened to my laddu? And then there was one serving boy who was standing behind with a twinkle in his eyes. He indicated to him that it is Swami who was told to remove the laddu.
Oh my God.
So that's how Swami was.
Yes.
That if, even,
if we don't exercise that judgment, you know, he goes.
He is the inner indweller who,
yes,
will remind us again and again.
Again.
And taking at the spiritual meaning of this, even when we come to the spiritual life, if we really, really rely on the Swami, the Lord, the Guru within, even if our mind tries to falter,
yes,
He, as the Lord and the controller, will ensure that we will not go the wrong way. That is the message I got from this incident one. And second one, which is very touching, and I will never forget, when I read this, it really, my hair stood. You know, one of the batches, it did happen that some boys overate and they had stomach upset. And when Swami noticed, came to know that boys have got, three or four of them have got stomach upset, you know what Swami did?
Mm-hmm.
Swami said, you know, my Miryalu rasam, the pepper rasam, is very popular.
Yes.
So let me make pepper rasam for you. This is very good for you.
Let
stomach.
Me make.
Indigestion.
Yes. And Swami went to the kitchen and prepared pepper rasam. And of course, it was given to everybody, but specifically for these four boys who had got stomach upset.
They would have thanked their illness, actually.
Or maybe others thanked that because of these four, all others got the chance to take.
But look at Bhagwan's
The point to take from this is, see, look at Swami's love. How much concern was it necessary? He had some of the best cooks with him. He could have just told them, make something for... another thing which we'd like to share with the listeners, Swami was so kind, he will always ensure, in every Kodai trip, he will take at least one doctor.
Yes.
And one of the students who serves in the medicine or the dispensary section of the hostel.
Yes.
Because he knew in Kodai Kanal, if my boys or some of the guests need medical attention, there should be something available on the spot.
Yes.
See, that's the concern he had. So, you know, that this all these small, or apparently small things show how much of love and concern that Swami had for all those people around him.
Amazing. I think I have heard instances of how Bhagwan has created tablets, materialized tablets for those boys who were sick. And you also had Bhagwan asking the boys to go for a long walk in the morning.
Yeah.
I think that was part of the Kodai routine.
Yeah. Very important routine, and an 8-kilometer walk, no less.
Yes.
It was an 8-kilometer walk.
And sometimes, yes. Yeah. And if you do it sincerely, that 8 kilometers, that is quite a bit. Yes. And I remember you talking about the Swami's concern. In 1 year, some of the boys noticed that as they were going for this morning walk, they saw one vehicle which is always following them. And, you know, for some time they didn't really take notice of that. But then later they asked one teacher, why is this vehicle always following us when we are going for this walk? And they said, no, this vehicle actually sent by Swami. Mm-hmm. Just in case any of you at any time, in any point in time during the walk, if you need help, then this vehicle is there to assist you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, to that extent, Bhagwan went. Mm. I mean, I think the only way you can explain all this is that expression of, you know, thousand mothers' love or whatever you call it. I mean, that expression of unbounded love.
Absolutely. Mm. Yes. And just to one more thought on the food, because the question from the listener is on the food. I thought of sharing that. One learning that we could draw from these food sessions was, anything that is physical or from the world will never satiate you forever. Impossible. It may be tempting to begin with, but after some time you'll know the value that is. This is not something that will give us the eternal joy. How ephemeral the joy is. Swami made us go through this sort of circumstances to let us learn that all these worldly joys are never going to give the eternal bliss, which only can come.
They can only give you temporary happiness, temporary pleasures.
And maybe a lot of sorrows later on.
Later on.
Like the number of peppers that had to be eaten separately.
Yes.
So that was a learning. From each of these things, we can learn a spiritual message.
I think that was a common experience of everyone who has gone to Kodai Kanal. By the time you are 1 week into living in Sai Shruti and enjoying all that food, and after 7-8 days you don't have that much of fascination for the food, you know, you slowly wanes. So I mean, that's the way Bhagwan perhaps was teaching us. These are silent lessons that were coming, that this is not ultimately which is going to give you happiness. And we were talking about that song Madhura Mohana. You know, in that song there is one paragraph which says that what is the most beautiful thing in this world which can give us permanent joy? It is the Lord's name. It is the Lord's form, that Madhura Mohana, the beautiful form. And then in that paragraph, there is one stanza where it explains that the best activities for the body to engage in is only contemplation of the Lord. You know, what is the point of having this body which cannot meditate on the Lord? What is the point of having this hand which doesn't worship God? So I remember my brothers telling me, whenever this stanza came in that song, Swami used to be very moved. I think perhaps because this was the lesson that he was trying to din into everyone's heart. And so whenever this one came, you know, Swami, you could see that Swami was so happy. And he was is all the time, you know, showing through his expression that this is what I want you to learn. Maybe we should listen to that beautiful stanza and then maybe we'll dwell on it for a minute or two. So that was the third stanza of Madhura Mohana. And as I was mentioning to you, the meaning of this stanza is, what for is this body which cannot meditate on you? What for are these hands which do not worship you? What for are these eyes which cannot relish your beautiful divine form? What for is this life which does not think of you? And the life that forgets you? And what for is this life which does not contemplate on you? What for is this tongue which does not chant your name? And if you really look at what was happening in Kodaikanal, Swami was giving the boys this experience of how their senses all the time could be spent only in divine contemplation and only in seeing the form, only in doing his bhajans, only thinking constantly what to do to make Swami happy. Okay, so should we compose a new song today to make Swami happy? Should we make a card to make Swami happy? I think that was one more experience that was coming through. You cannot get your joys through food, but this is the way to lead your life where you can always find bliss. And I think that is what is truly upavasa too. In fact, Sister Namita, she has asked the question, what is the meaning of fasting and what is the meaning of upavasa? And I think this is what is upavasa is. What do you think, Sanjay?
Yeah, upavasa, the word literally means upavasa, to sit near.
Yes.
Sit near the divine.
To sit near, yes.
Yeah. As far as I know, in the horizon of my limited knowledge, I don't think Swami ever advocated extreme asceticism.
Yes.
As a general rule. Maybe he did it for some particular person, but as a general rule, sure, he didn't. And when I meditate on that, the reason that comes to my mind is this. Swami always made us realize and understand that the fundamental conflict of humanity is division. Swami always said all is one. But there is something inside us which we call the I, the ahamkara, the ego, the mai, whatever names we give it, which loves to divide, divide and divide.
Yes.
So real upavasa is to fast that ego which is always feeding and growing. To fast it and to shrivel it so that finally it melts away, that is real upavasa. So we just have to really see how does our ego grow. It grows by power. It grows by controlling others. It grows when it identifies with fame, recognition, and so on. So forth. The list is endless. So for a real sadhaka, the upavasa that must fundamentally concern him is how he can ignore the needs and demands of his ego and how he can take the divine path, fast his ego, so that it shrivels, shrinks, and finally melts away into oblivion. This is what I feel is the real fast that Swami always taught us.
Yes.
But when we walk on the path of extreme asceticism, that also sometimes adds to the ego.
Yeah.
That
yes.
I always felt was Swami's concern. Oh, I'm so good, I fast 3 days a week. I can go without food and water for 3 days. Oh, I'm so good, I can meditate for 6 hours on a stretch. So, you know, I am so good. So real fasting is when the I becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. So
yes.
I think that is the real fasting that true.
That's the way we have always heard Bhagwan explain what is upavasa and what is fasting. He has never, even I don't remember even one discussion Bhagwan has said, okay, this is the way you should fast, you give up food for one or two sessions. And I think that is what was happening in Kodaikanal. People are going through actually the real upavasa.
You know, because it is very easy to be without food for 2 days.
Yes.
But try to ignore the ego for 5 minutes, see
yes.
what a noise mm-hmm. it makes.
Yes.
You know, I just remember in one of the Kodai trips, you know, just aside the point, Swami asked, do you love me? Or Swami asked a student, do you love me? He said, of course, Swami, I can do anything for you. Swami said, what can you do for me? The boy said, Swami, I can die for you.
Uh-huh.
Swami said, don't die for me, live for me.
Live for me.
Dying for me is easy. Living for me is a real challenge every moment. So food fasting is simple, but fast the ego, well, try and see how difficult it is.
Yes. In fact, in one of these Kodai sessions, one brother asked Swami, how to control the mind? How to master the mind? And Swami said, the way to master the mind is to love God more and more.
Mm.
So I think what was happening here is, you know, Swami is giving us that experience, giving that opportunity for each one of these students to love God more and more. You come back, you reminisce all those events, and you think about all those sessions, and you have to fall in love with God again and again.
Yes.
I think that is the experience that probably Swami wanted each one.
Mm. The more you love God,
yes.
the less will be the attraction of the world.
Yeah. You face yes. the sun, the shadow falls behind.
Yes.
You turn your back to the sun, the shadow is in front of you.
Yes. And I think a lot of these sessions that happened in Kodaikanal, inside Sai Shruti, I think whenever students ask these questions, or devotees ask these questions, or Bhagwan had these informal conversations, I think a lot of these tenets of wisdom that came out, I think those are something which are so precious.
Absolutely. In fact, I would say more than the food that we had, food for the stomach, the amount of wisdom, learning that we got from these sessions where
yes.
we really had the upavasa with
yes.
our beloved Lord. Those were the sessions for lifetimes, not
yes.
just this lifetimes. And I feel there were two or three ways in which Swami conducted these sessions. One way was, you know, he would talk about certain personalities in Swami's life, who some devotees from older days, about their devotion, about their love for Swami, and how Swami reciprocated that love, like the Rani of Jind or
yes.
the Raja of Venkatgiri. I just remembered once Swami was telling about Venkatgiri Raja. When Swami went to Venkatgiri, and after staying for about few hours, when he was coming back, and as Swami bid farewell, and his car was moving, the Raja, Venkatgiri Raja, he was standing there, and he was waiting to see, I mean, till the last moment, till he can see Swami's car going. And as Swami's car went little far, he did namaskar on the road.
Yes.
To Swami, who was there.
In fact, I remember Bhagwan saying how you would want that dust to fall.
Exactly.
On
and the dust started flowing on him because
yes.
of the.
He wanted that dust of Swami's car to
yeah,
fall on him.
Yeah, people said that why are you say the whole dust is coming on? He says, let that dust from this holy, the vibration of this dust, let it come
yes.
on me and let me get blessed. That
yes.
was the divine feeling of a Raja who was
yes.
From a royal family.
Yes.
Obviously, there's no wonder because he was. Wanted to have the vibrations of the Lord of the universe.
Yes. So, in fact, I remember Swami also talking about Sachidanandam, Mr. Sachidanandam,
mm-hmm.
who is
a caretaker
of the Sai Shruti Ashram.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami once shared how every action of him was so much dedicated and surrendered
mm-hmm.
to Swami that once when he was driving the car and he had to go through this ghat road which had a lot of twists and turns, and Swami said, you know, at one point in time he just gave up and he just closed his eyes. He just told Swami, I cannot do this anymore, I cannot drive this, I just leave it to you. He just closed his eyes and he was in prayer, that's it. He left the steering wheel and the car was on autopilot from then on. In fact, Swami himself narrated this.
Yes, I have heard this also.
I mean, there are so many such occasions when Bhagwan, I mean, those were really highly inspiring.
Right.
Swami, you know, these are devotees who have touched the Lord, and you see physically Swami responding to their devotion.
True. And then another way, second way he used to do is by telling us stories about various epics, Ramayana,
yes,
about Krishna, and giving the inner
yes
significance of those various events. And third one would be in which he will ask any of the people, any not only students, even the senior members, to ask any questions, if they want to ask any questions and get some clarification from Bhagwan. So let me share some one or two very touching incidents which happened. Let me start from the materializations, what Swami used to do. And generally in one Kodai canal, you will at least witness easily about 15 to 20 of them. But what is important for us is to see what message that Swami wanted to communicate. And I will share one materialization which had a bigger, very big impact on me. This was in 2003 Kodai. Incidentally, Vishu and Sanjay, you know that this was the time exactly 10 years back, 2003, we were in Kodai.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. We went on 11th May. We started on 11th May from Vrindavan and we returned back on 20th. It was an unusual visit. Generally, Kodai visits used to be in April and end in early May or late April or early May. Here we, in 2003, we went in mid-May sort of. Anyway, so one of those sessions, evening sessions, Swami, incidentally it was exactly 15th of May 2003. It was Buddha Purnima. And Swami started talking about Buddha.
Okay.
And as he was speaking, suddenly he waved his hand and materialized a red color, beautiful Buddha, about 3 to 4 inches height. And I was, all of us were so amazed because I have never heard of Swami materializing Buddha statues or Buddha idol. It was a beautiful one, reddish color, and Swami showed it to all of us. And he said, can anybody tell what is this statue made of? So various answers came, sand, plaster, Paris, or whatever. Some said, no. And he said, finally he said, this statue is made from Lumbini mud.
Mm-hmm.
The mud, the sacred mud of Lumbini.
So Lumbini is the birthplace
of Buddha. So that has Buddha. It has those sacred vibrations. And Swami then spoke about the austerities and various penances that Lord Buddha did. And one thing he mentioned was, if anyone meditates on Buddha, he can get moksha.
Swami said
this was a statement Swami made.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, when I thought over it, contemplated, and I searched that actually what Buddha means in Buddhism, it's not just tagged to Lord Siddhartha, not just the Gautama Buddha. Buddha is there in everyone. And if you look at, probably what Swami meant was, if you could contemplate on the Buddha nature, which is there in every being, then definitely. Because Buddha exemplified, he was the personification after his enlightenment, he was the personification of the supreme love or the compassion.
Yes.
And if we can contemplate on that Buddha nature.
Yes.
And if that same love which is there inside us, it hasn't just manifested, because it is covered by so many things. If we can do that, then that by itself is moksha. That was one great thing which I learned, as I remembered, is very fresh in my mind, so that I will share that with you. And another one, little, appears to be a little humorous incident, but a message which was driven was very potent. In one Kodai canal visit, Swami materialized a huge diamond, really huge. It was about almost the size of a palm. And Swami held it, and in most of the trips, Swami would distribute cameras to boys, you know. So as soon as Swami Mittal is such a huge diamond, all were excited, and some 25 cameras came up and started to just about to click, and Swami quickly withdrew the diamond back. He closed his fist and said, no photos. And everybody seemed to be dejected. Then Swami said, only one. I will allow only one person to click. And there was one senior member who had come. And he had a very good camera, I remember. Very good, nice camera. Professional camera. Swami said, hey, only you will click. Okay, come here. And that person came near. And Swami held the closed fist and said, you just be ready. I'll just open for 1 second. You click. I don't want anybody else to click. Okay. So the person said, yes, Swami, and he did all the focusing, flash ready, and said, Swami, I'm ready. Swami said, okay, I'll just open for a second. Yes, Swami, I will click. And Swami slowly opened his fist, and the diamond was not there.
Not there.
Oh my God. And you should see the expression on that person's face, because he was surprised, and everybody for a moment was surprised, and there was a big laughter after that. No. But the message which I got from that incident is, you know, we as human beings tend to get so fascinated by these material things, you know, the diamond, which looks so glittering. But what about the person who created, the creator? Did we tend to forget him looking at the creation?
In fact, I think there have been occasions when Swami has directly given this lesson.
Yeah.
When he has created something fantastic.
Like the deer which he had created in one of the summer court sessions.
Yes. Where, you know, he went round the hall showing everyone. And then in the end, he said, you know, every day, none of you bothered to think about the hand that created. And you were all the time fascinated with that creation. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that was a learning I got. Don't focus on the creation. You can enjoy the creation, but always keep in your back of your mind who's the creator.
Yes, the substratum. That is the essence. I think there are so many lessons of life to learn from that, Sanjay. What do you think?
Yeah, this is just not the saga of a Sai devotee. I think this is the saga of any human being anywhere. Anybody who's living on this planet, we tend to get lost in the creation and forget the creator. At the same time, what I want to emphasize is there is really no creator separate from us.
Yes.
We are the creators of our own life, and we get so enamored by our physical situation, what we call life situation, life events, or we get so enamored by our thoughts. Some of us get so fascinated by our emotions, by the movements of energy inside the body, and various other levels of creation in quotes. But as Swami always used to say, the creation, if it is there, then it has to have a source.
Yes.
And the source is creator. And that creator is the I. You know, it is our own self, the deeper core of our own being. So that is the essence of sadhana, I believe, for any sadhaka anywhere following any tradition.
Yep.
Finally, the essence of the sadhana is simply this. Pay attention to the source, which means pay attention to your own deeper core. Which is love, compassion, different names, different traditions use different names. Somebody says being, somebody says silence, somebody says love. So the essence is this. Ignore or withdraw your attention from the creation and plunge within to drive towards the source, which is the creator. So I think this is the quintessence of sadhana.
All problems arise when you stop with the creation.
Yes. Mm.
And don't go beyond.
Also, creation again is divisive. Creation is multiplicity, the creator is
one.
So it's all the same, moving from multiplicity to one, from form to the formless, from time to the timeless, it's all the same.
Yes.
Basically from the creation to the creator.
Yes.
And no, but what? Let's not give this impression to our listeners that all these sessions were all heavy, deep, thought-provoking, philosophical sessions. Actually, some of them were outright fun.
Yes.
One session which is so vivid in my memory, it was in 2005, and for some reason, Swami asked the student, can you do mimicry? And he started mimicking first animals, like first he mimicked a dog, then he mimicked a hen, you know, and he started mimicking some people, and then everybody caught up, and Swami, believe me, Bishu, believe me, Neeraj, in my 11 years of physical association with Swami, I have never ever seen Swami laugh like that.
Oh my God.
It was such a hilarious situation First Swami started giggling like a child, and then he started laughing. He was almost falling off his chair.
Oh,
can you visualize for a moment Swami holding his belly, laughing wildly, begging the students to stop?
Oh my God.
Because he is not able to control his laughter. And imagine what would have happened to all of us sitting at his feet. You know, one Swami's smile is enough to bring smile to his face. Everybody was laughing. We had such a heartfelt laugh riot for 15 minutes. You know, the whole Sai Shruti was ringing with laughter. I tell you, after what it is now, 7-8 years after that day, even today when I feel a little down, I just have to close my eyes and visualize that evening.
Oh my God.
And automatically a smile comes to my lips. It was such a fun-filled evening with Swami. My God, in those 15 minutes, the bliss that we experienced laughing with Swami like that, so one with Him, no words can describe that joy. And
laughing by itself is supposed to be a good therapy.
Laughter is the best medicine, they say.
Yes.
And imagine laughing with God,
with God,
and it was such a release. One has to really.
In fact, I remember on so many occasions there were laughter. So because suddenly, you know, even these fun sessions were going on, you know, Swami suddenly revealed. I remember suddenly Swami revealed some things about the hostel, some things about the relationship between different teachers in the hostel, which no one actually ever thought. Swami would know. You know, he is omnipresent, but you never thought, you know, Swami would publicly say, "I know this is the relationship that this teacher has with this person." You are like, "Oh my God, Swami, you know this."
And once, you know, we are in the one of these sessions, and suddenly out of the blue, you know, Anil Kumar, Professor Anil Kumar, his Swami's was for a very long time Swami's translator. Swami asked him, "So, okay, what do you think about these boys? Tell me, speak a few lines on each of the students, because they are all your students. After all, you see them in the university every day. Speak a few lines on each of the students." We were really tense. Oh my God, what is he going to say about us to Swami? This is a life-threatening situation. After all, we are just in the second day of our Kodai trip. God knows what's going to happen. We were really tense, actually. But the beauty of the situation was this. Anil Kumar started speaking, and he individually spoke for 2 minutes on almost 9 students. And he had nothing but kind and positive things to say about each and every student. We all have our faults, just as we did, all of us have. But he chose only to talk about the positive, kind, beautiful things that each of us had. That left me wondering, what is happening here? And the reflection that I had was this, and maybe you can add to it, was that Swami is such a towering, positive presence in each of our lives. So deep inside we know that Swami is pure positivity. So even though we have our faults, when we express to Swami, all we can get out of our system to offer at His feet is positivity.
Yes.
Also deep inside we realize that no mother ever likes to listen to bad things about her children. Although she knows everything.
Yes.
But when she is listening from somebody else, she only wants to listen to good things. So Professor Anil Kumar knew for his own sake how much Swami loves his students and what a divine love he has for them. You know, so at very multi-dimensional levels, it was a beautiful evening.
Yeah, and another thought maybe what could have transpired, you know, if we reflect upon our lives, the amount of love and the amount of concern and the time and the energy that Swami gave, at least I can say for myself, I definitely have so many drawbacks, so many shortfalls, but Swami always looked at the positive things in a person.
Yes.
You know, somebody had put it very nicely, when a master sculptor, he looks at a rock, he doesn't look at a rock like a rock. He looks at the rock in the image of the statue that he's going to carve out of it, that beautiful statue, and he just removes the unwanted portion. So Swami looked at every person from what that person was, the future, what he can be. He always looked from that point of view, and that's why he always saw the positive aspects. So having that learning over years, probably Professor Anil Kumar also would have felt that we have to reflect the same nature, that when we see another person, what are the positive things we can see and mention about it. That is a wonderful
thing. Yes.
And taking this further, you mentioned about Professor Anil Kumar. I remember one of the sessions in 96 when Sir had accompanied our group. this is the second method in which Swami teaches, is when he asks any of the group members to ask any questions on which you want any clarification. So Professor Anil Kumar asked this question, beautiful question, and I'm sure this question occurs to almost every devotee of Swami. Professor Anil Kumar asked, see Swami, when we are with you in your proximity, we are so disciplined, we are so devoted, we have that steadfastness to focus, concentration on you, and the goodness flows through us. But generally we observe, the moment we go back to the world, or we go little away from your proximity, we tend to go back to our own worldly ways. Why is it that? Can you please explain to us why it happens?
Why it doesn't last?
Yeah, why it's not a ever lasting thing? Swami's first sentence reply was, your question itself is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He said there's something wrong in what you asked, because if you really have those qualities, good virtues in you, then those virtues and those qualities will reflect in any situation you are, whether you are in Kodaikanal, whether you are in Puttaparthi or Bangalore or anywhere in the world. If those qualities of intrinsic part of our nature,
if you are not only pretending, but if it's really there in
and
you.
Swami exactly used the word. He says, here you are just pretending, you are just showing that you have those virtues. Hmm. That's why when you go away from me, those virtues don't express themselves. It should become a natural part of your life. And Swami gave a beautiful example. I mean, that is the beauty of Swami. How he used to explain a concept. He said, for example, now see, all of you have come to Kodaikanal. And you know the weather in Kodaikanal is very chill. Okay? So you are prepared. You have got a rug in which you can sleep. You have got a blanket. You have got sweaters. Right? Right or not? All said, yes, Swami, that's true. And Swami said, in life also, you know, in the world, the conditions are frosty, chilly. You know the weather is bad there. Why don't you prepare yourself? If you don't take your blanket, rug and your sweater with you, whom are you to blame? And you know what is a blanket and a rug? He said, you should carry the blanket of devotion. You should carry the rug of duty. And you should wear the sweater of discipline.
Wow.
Beautiful.
Mm. You carry it with you. Why?
Devotion, duty and discipline.
You know the outside condition. It is so cold, so chilling. So prepare yourself. If you are not prepared yourself, it is your fault. So this is the way Swami is to communicate or explain to us the various spiritual concepts. And
once somebody said to Swami, I remember, Swami, I love you. Swami said, I don't want your love. I want your transformation.
Yes.
So, you know, it is all about us, what we gather from.
In fact, I remember the one brother sharing, it happened in the Kodaikanal trip. He said, Swami, everyone's aspiration is to attain moksha. Mm-hmm. And moksha, you want to get rid of the cycle of birth and death, and you know that you cannot get moksha without the grace of the Lord.
Mm.
Whatever you may do, you have to have God's grace to get moksha. And he says, Swami, you are here, so you tell us what pleases you the most, so that we can do only that and get moksha. Then Swami says, what pleases me is this, do as I say.
Beautiful.
I mean, that is the summum bonum of entire spirituality. I mean, in terms of being a devotee and loving Swami is actually ultimately loving his message. And I think those are the things that were coming through in these beautiful sessions. And in fact, we can go on because these interactive sessions, which is to happen for 8 or almost 9 sessions in Sai Shruti, and I think every session had its own hue, its own character, its own lessons to convey. Because I remember some sessions as were very hilarious, some sessions had games, some sessions had only discourses, some sessions had a lot of interactive sessions, some sessions are filled with materializations. Mm. So I think maybe we'll continue this discussion and see what more we can unearth and share with our listeners, because this Kodai Ocean is such a huge ocean, and let's reserve the rest for the next time. Maybe we'll end with one beautiful English song. This kind of sums up that relationship that we have with God. You know, we have the Divine Master, where we pray to the Lord to be with us. We pray with the Lord to take us from darkness to light. We pray to the Lord to always be with us, and when we slip and fall, to hold us and keep us always with Him. It's a beautiful English song, "Every Moment of My Life."
Every moment of my life, please be with me. In every single act of mine, be thou my guide. Baba, Sai Baba, Baba, Sai Baba. When I slip, when I fall, lend me your hand. When I stray far away, bring me back again. When I slip, when I fall, lend me your hand. When I stray far away, bring me back again. Baba, Sai Baba, Baba, Sai Baba. From the darkness into light, lead me, Father. From the darkness into light, lead me, Father. From unreal to the real. From unreal. Baba, Sai Baba, Baba, Sai Baba.
So with this, dear listeners, it's time to wind up this Thursday live sessions from the studios of Radio Sai. Please do write to us and share with us your feedback and comments on this program and on our entire Thursday live broadcast right from the morning. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. And if you joined in the program midway, or if you want to listen to this program at your convenience, you can download it from our website, from the Thursday live archives, from the website radiosai.org. Thank you so much for being with us. We take this opportunity to express and offer our deep sense of gratitude to Swami for enabling us to offer this program to you. Swami truly is the soul of Radio Sai. If everything happens, if for 1 year we have continued this Thursday live programs, it is purely, entirely His grace. And thank you so much for your time and your support. Even as I sign off now, you will continue to listen to a drama by the MBA students of Bhagwan's University, which was staged in front of him in 2002, in 25th August 2002. This drama is entitled Desha Bhakti, Daiva Bhakti. So we will continue to listen to this in a few minutes from now. Thank you so much for being with us. And finally, a sweet goodbye and loving sidearm from Prashant Nilay.